Welcome to the 22nd episode of the official Espigan podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
Alex Nicely here from his farmhouse kitchen in Kerment, Hungary, speaking with Professor Hania Szajewska, who is in Warsaw, if I've got it right. I can see her office behind her. You can't, but it's a lovely office. Professor Szajewska has a long and distinguished curriculum vitae. She took her medical degree in Poland, in Warsaw, in 1984. And then, like so many of the people we interview, she went on to win all the prizes and to sail from international posting to international posting to international posting, then returning home in order to rise to the top of the tree there. She chose a tree to rise, or to climb, I should say, that isn't very familiar to me, because it's another aspect of nutrition. It's the aspect of biotics, probiotics, symbiotics, prebiotics, postbiotics. And this is a new world for me. But I've got the best possible guide, and so do you. Hania, welcome.
My pleasure to be with you.
Let's start with definitions. I've got on a piece of paper in front of me these four words: probiotics, symbiotics, prebiotics, and postbiotics. For those who, like me, are just starting out at a negative level of knowledge, what are these?
Well, I will briefly try to explain, starting with a term biotics, which is not well defined in the literature, but we are using, as you said, for those three: probiotics, prebiotics, symbiotics, and postbiotics. But let me start with the first one, which are probiotics. And these are live microorganisms that, when given in adequate amounts, will confer health benefits. So live microorganisms. Then we have prebiotics, and some people are saying this is like a lunch for microorganisms, which means there are substrates which are beneficial, which allow the growth of some of the beneficial microorganisms. And then we have symbiotics, and in a very simple way, it's like giving probiotics and prebiotics together. It's a probably oversimplification. Okay. And finally, we do have a relatively new term, which is a postbiotic, and these are inanimate microorganisms, but still conferring a health benefit. So you can see we go from live microorganisms through lunch for microorganisms, two of them together, and then inanimate microorganisms.
I think that I've got that now, and I hope to remember it through the course of the interview. So now, where in your professional training, in your post-professional training, did this become an interest of yours? What said to you, Hana, come, be my bride?
Well, that's a very nice question, and I can tell you, when the first time I heard the term probiotics, which was at the meeting Espigan, or a joint meeting Espigan and NASPGHAN, European Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology and Nutrition, and our North American colleagues, it was in Houston. There was a meeting of the working group, and someone was discussing the study on probiotics. I did not know what is the word probiotics. On Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG, I have never heard about the Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG. But there was a people discussing a clinical trial, and the question was asked, is there anyone from Eastern Europe who would like to join the study?
But just a moment, you're in the back of the room.
Yes, I was in the meeting of the working group, in the meeting room of the working. So I raised my hand without knowing what does it mean. And I said, well, I'm from Poland, from Eastern Europe, and I would like to join the group. I
what a
came
way to
back.
go.
I went back home to Poland, and I was trying to find in encyclopedia. There was no internet at that time. What does it mean, this word probiotics? And it was not really I couldn't find it. So it took me a while. I started the study to be part of the clinical study without really truly knowing what does it mean. And of course, it was a long time that we published a very nice. We performed a very nice study. It was published. Of course, in the meantime, I learned what are probiotics and many other biotics, but this was the beginning. I just wanted to be part of this, part of this exciting scientific world.
I really love that story. It is the antidote to all those stories about don't put up your hand, never volunteer for anything. But I also I'm now I'm imagining you on your flight back to Poland in the airplane saying to your chief, a boss, I've just committed our institution to participation in a, how did that go?
Well, this was well, but he was, I had a very good boss who really thought, well, if the young person wants to do it, something, let's her do it.
Let her do it. So what was this study that you refer to, the one that had good
Well, it
results
was
in the
one of the study. First was on acute gastroenteritis, and then it was on acute gastroenteritis and the use of oral rehydration solution with Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG. One of very, very first studies on which was done with the Espegan. So long time ago. Also, there are many other colleagues from various countries. So this is how I started to know many of the colleagues from various countries, and we jointly performed this study with over 200 participants. And the study, which really was the beginning of the use of probiotics for the management of acute gastroenteritis. It was led by Professor Stefano Guandalini from Italy.
That's a name.
Who then moved, who then moved to the United States a long time ago.
A long time back. Right. So that was your jumping off place. And what were some of the next steps along your route?
Well, I would say organizing an important step in my life was organizing the Espegan meeting in Warsaw. Or even I would start it differently, going to the Espegan summer schools, which were organized for by our society, which is like a training course, for a week, and then you go with like a small group, let's say 25, 30 participants, approximately the same number of faculty, and again, I was probably the only one from Eastern Europe at that time. And after a week, you start to know a lot of people, and you also start to know a lot of members of the faculty. So that was really changing my professional life. It opened a lot of doors for me. Then I was lucky enough to be involved in the organization of the Espegan meeting in Warsaw, one of the not the first one of the in Eastern Europe, but one of the first in Eastern Europe. And it really, Espegan really changed my professional life in a very good way. Almost everything I would say at the beginning was because of the society.
That's the network and the personal development side of what's been a spectacular career. But let's talk about learning the names of other bacilli and design study and organizing other studies. And how did you branch out? How did you take that field forward?
Well, then it was easier. I mean, you start to know people and you start to do clinical trials. And I would say then the next steps were much easier. You are just interested in exploring each of the microorganisms to see whether or not they work. I was interested in evidence-based medicine. I was really interested in clinical research, in conducting randomized controlled trials, really to assess each of the probiotics, whether it works or not. And then I was able to have a number of collaborators in my department who, like young people, are now working with me, and we are doing a lot of clinical research, which I think we are able to answer some of the important questions, clinical questions, because this is what we are always trying to do, to answer clinically important questions. So to combine an interest in microbiota, in biotics, but also in evidence-based medicine, in clinical research.
There are so many ways that the use of probiotics could go. Although this may be far-fetched, the use of fecal transplants.
Yeah.
Isn't that a form of probiotics?
Well, not exactly, because it contains some of the microbes, but fecal microbiota transfers is something that you have like the stool, the poop, I would say, and you transfer one person to another. This is extremely fascinating area of research. Everything starts with the interest of the microbiota and the role that microbiota play in the in the etiology of various diseases, many diseases, including very serious diseases such as Clostridioides difficile infection, very severe infection, inflammation of the gut. And this fecal microbiota transfer, then that you transfer the stool, I would say, from one person, healthy person, to the person with a disease. It's one of the success stories, I would say, because you can really reduce the risk of the infection. And the it's now, I would say, the standard therapy for recurrent Clostridioides difficile. Fascinating area. Many other indications are being studied. In the future, we probably will have it more standardized way, but this is definitely one of the areas of research interest for many.
However, that, excuse the pun, the play on words, but that approach to reorganizing the enterobiome proceeds from bottom up. And what we're talking about in probiotics, symbiotics, and the rest is usually top down, orally ingested modifications of the enterobiome or of the enterobiome's environment.
You're absolutely correct. But when we are speaking about fecal microbiota transfers, well, there are ways also to give it orally, for example, in capsules. So, you know, there's a whole area of research interest now, how you can do it in a way that will be more acceptable also for the patients. So, for example, having these, having in capsules, it's something that it's more and more commonly used, I would say. We are not doing it in our department. There are some other colleagues who are doing it. But this is a way you can do it. So yes, capsules, this is one of the forms.
Well, I've taken us, I think, a little off the track that I meant, or I hoped that we would follow. And that's my bad. I'd like to talk about some of the clinical indications for use of probiotics or their varieties. And one of them, of course, would be antibiotic-associated diarrhea.
Yeah.
When we've damaged the enterobiome or damaged its environment, and we have to try to set it right.
You're absolutely correct. Antibiotics are really one of the disruptors of the microbiota, very strong disruptor. And with the use of antibiotics, what is the risk that we will have antibiotic-associated diarrhea? So prevention of antibiotic-associated diarrhea is one of the well-documented indications for the use of selected probiotics, because we know that not all probiotics are equal, that each one of them has to be evaluated separately for its efficacy and for its safety. So I would say probiotics as a group reduce the risk of antibiotic-associated diarrhea. However, it's important to choose the right probiotic.
For that, of course, you need you need to know what you're doing, or you need to have at your elbow somebody who knows what she is doing. And that's what Espigan is particularly good at, is assembling and presenting specialized knowledge to make it possible for a practitioner to have that person metaphorically at his or her elbow. I understand that you and the Espigan research group, clinical research group, have been working on putting together exactly guidelines of this sort. Have they appeared yet?
Yes, they have just been published online, and I hope it will be very soon in the printed version of a Journal of Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology and Nutrition, so the journal of our society. And yes, as you said, it was this is a document which was developed by the whole group of my colleagues, and I had the privilege to be part of that group. This is a special interest group on microbiota and gut modification, and these recent guidelines on the use of probiotics for selected gastrointestinal disorders. This is one of the most recent outcomes of our work.
I'm going to ask you to help our listeners to take part in what you might call an information transplant now. That is, I want you to pep up our intellectual enterobiome with a capsule version of those guidelines. What are some of the more important things from those guidelines that you'd like to share?
Okay, so first of all, I think it's, again, and allow me to repeat again, that not all probiotics are created equal, and each of the probiotics has to be evaluated separately. So this is the first take-home message. The second, that there are certain indications for which selected probiotics can be used, and I will give you two examples. The first is prevention of antibiotic-associated diarrhea, which we already mentioned, and there are two probiotics which are being recommended, which are L-rhamnosus GG and Saccharomyces boulardii. The same two probiotics will be also recommended for the treatment of acute gastroenteritis. Of course, the most important, the key management is rehydration and proper nutrition. However, the physicians can also consider using one of those two, especially those two. There are two other probiotics, like Lactobacillus reuteri and the combination of two others, which are mentioned in the guidelines. But what is important, it's always in addition to rehydration, never instead. An important question which people are often ask is what you can expect when you use probiotics the treatment of acute gastroenteritis. And this is a reduction in the duration of diarrhea by approximately 1 day. And people may say, 1 day, does it matter? Well, when I have done one of my very first meta-analysis, and there was an effect that probiotics reduced the duration of diarrhea by 1 day, I told my husband, who is a cardiologist, who doesn't know anything about pediatrics, and I told him, look, it's useless. It just reduces the duration of diarrhea by 1 day. And he said, Hania, did you ever have diarrhea? Because if yes, you would have known that 1 day less in the toilet makes a tremendous difference. So it shows you that the interpretation of this effect size may be different by two physicians. It will be the same with our patients. So these are the two indications. There are other diarrheal diseases, like prevention of nosocomial diarrhea, that you can use some of the probiotics. Okay. You can also use it in addition to Helicobacter pylori eradication, because it will reduce side effects like Saccharomyces boulardii is one of the probiotics. For some of the functional gastrointestinal disorders, we can use some of the probiotics. So there is a number of specific conditions for which selected probiotics can be used.
That is great. Well, we've got the toolkit now in front of us, right?
Yes.
And we can, together with the video on YouTube, we can start to attempt our little bit of home do-it-yourself work here. But there's engineering, and then there's the science behind it. Do you have a few words for us on how probiotics make a difference to how the bowel is working?
Well, do you mean like what is the mechanism of action of probiotics, if I understand you correctly, yeah?
You put it much more concisely and better than I did. Thank you.
Okay, I wish I know or we know the exact mechanism behind how probiotics are working. However, there are still some mechanisms which can be discussed. Like, for example, there is some kind of competition between, you know, on the receptor sides, between, let's say, these beneficial bacteria, the microorganisms, all these harmful microorganisms. This is one of the mechanisms. Competition for the nutrients. So of course, if there is a microorganism which will eat everything, like let's say glucose, and it cannot be used by other microorganisms, they will not have a food for the growth. So this is another. And very important is the effect on the immune system. This is something which really differentiates various microorganisms. And we are saying about the strain specificity is because not all probiotics have exactly the same effect on the immune system. So it shows you that there is no one single mechanism, but various mechanisms. Like, for example, for immune system, that it contributes to the secretion of IgA, one of these immunoglobulins, which is important for our immune system. So it shows you no one single mechanism, many mechanisms, and there might be some which will be very specific for specific microorganisms.
Wow. It almost makes me want, well, this is a lie, but I'm going to tell it anyway. It almost makes me want to go back to medical school and start again. There's so much to know.
Oh, microbiota is fascinating. I mean, the whole story of the microbiota, because the interest in probiotics or various biotics is because of the interest in the microorganisms. This is behind the whole interest. And we know that the microbes are not just passengers, they do have a lot of function. They contribute to our immune function, they contribute to our digestion, they contribute to absorption. There is a gut-brain crosstalk through various molecules, you know, and it affects satiety, mood, pain. It's absolutely fascinating. And what we are trying to do, because of this interest in the microbiota, we are trying to do, like, to modify, if something goes wrong, to modify the microbiota, because there are many factors which are contribute to the microbiota, which are beneficial, but many which are harmful. Antibiotics, which you mentioned earlier, this is one of the disruptors of the microbiota, but there are many others. Diet, our diet is also has a huge effect on our microbiota.
Here I'm going to step in and say that brings me to your mention of diet brings me to something that I had hoped to touch on, which is that of postbiotics. Mm-hmm. If I have, let's just say that I have a Weizenbier, a wheat beer, and not a Kristallweizen, but the Hefeweizen, which still has the yeast at the bottom. And if I have that along with a toasted cheese sandwich, there's all kinds of yeast and yeasty beasties and their products in that bread. And cheese, of course, is nothing but a bacterial feast. Those are all postbiotics, aren't they?
Well, not exactly according to the definition, because when you are talking about the postbiotics, we are speaking about inanimate microorganisms and or the components, if I want to be very precise, and they need to have a proven beneficial effects. In every definition for probiotics, this proven beneficial effect is extremely important.
To you that a toasted cheese sandwich and a glass of beer have definite beneficial effects.
Well, not in a clinical trial the way we wanted, but yes. You can call it, it's also beneficial effect. But from scientific point of view, what we need, it's really like a beneficial effects, which is documented for all biotics in well-conducted, preferentially randomized controlled trials.
Thank you so much. Hanya, I'm so sorry to say it, but over your shoulder, I can see my producer, Selma Ertel, waving at me, saying, you don't have any more time, which I very much regret, because this is one of those themes that I'd love to keep going on, but not allowed, have to draw to a close. And that's lovely, and I endorse every single word that you have said. I think that Espigan is a brilliant venue, a brilliant forum for young people to get to know their professional colleagues, to network, and to learn, particularly those summer schools. But that doesn't alter the fact that you haven't answered my question. What song are you going to have us play?
Mm-hmm. Well, you surprised me with these questions, but let me think quickly. Well, I'm not sure it's a song, but I really like jazz. And I think that a person who is just really very linked to Polish jazz is Krzysztof Komeda, which is probably the most important, one of the most important artists in the history of the Polish, but I would say European jazz. So my choice would be for Krzysztof Komeda.
If you would like to listen to the song, check out our Spotify playlist, Espigan's Favorite Songs.
Thank you very much for making yourself available for this series of podcasts today. I've had a wonderful time.
Thanks a lot. It was my pleasure to be with you. Thanks a lot.